Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 143, episode 5 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness and say officially off the top, fuck the Koch brothers, fuck Fox News, fuck Rush Limbaugh,
all of it,
fuck Buck Sexton,
bye,
fuck Ben Shapiro.
No way.
It's Friday, July 24th, 2020. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. All right, stop, collaborate, and listen. Zeit is back with a brand new edition. These thighs are blinding whitely, but we're still dropping pods both daily and nightly. When will it stop? Yo, I don't know. Bring on Miles and let him flow.
Ooh.
To the extreme, I got that bod saddles. Up Shit's Creek and Anna's got our paddles. Hands.
Oh,
Zeit, guys, baby. That is courtesy of Chris Chambers, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Yes, it's Miles Gray, the Blazing Blade, the Gray Walker. Thank you for having me. I just thought of that 2 seconds ago, because I did not look up an AKA, but yes, thanks.
Well,
great to be here.
It's just, I'm glad we're starting this podcast off with you thanking me for having you on your own podcast.
Yeah.
I've always felt like I deserved more gratitude for having you.
It's like, you know what it is? It's almost like sitting in the back seat when like your partner drives or something, and you're like, you don't have to sit back there, but you're like, you know what? I don't know. I'm just going to try it out. Even though I normally
sit
shotgun, I'm just going to take it in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious, the talented Mr. Dave Schilling.
Oh, thanks. This is
fashion
not
icon.
Not the first time someone has said I am hilarious or talented. So
yes.
Sorry about that, but I will take it nonetheless. Thank you. I eat it up. I eat compliments for breakfast.
Yes.
There you go.
That's a great thing to eat for breakfast.
That's why I'm so thin.
Shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dave, how are you doing? How's the quarantine treating you?
I don't know. I felt like I was kind of low energy today. I knew I had this to work on and come on and talk to you guys for. And I just sort of like, am I not looking forward to this, or am I just so excited that I can't find the energy to do anything else. I felt like it was like Christmas Day. This is like my Christmas Day for quarantine. I tossed and turned all night. I woke up. I couldn't eat. I couldn't drink. I couldn't think. And now finally I'm here, and all the enthusiasm is just spilling out of me.
It's
incredible.
It's great to have you. We're enthusiastic to have you. We are energy vampires. We do suck the life force out of those we come into contact
with. Yeah, that Blade reference wasn't a joke.
That's real.
There's just like techno music thumping in my apartment, and I'm just about to get dumped with a bunch of blood.
Oh, man. Oof. I remember that was like the thing, like in junior high, you're like, dude, in this scene, just like fucking blood comes out of the ceiling. You're like, what?
Before all this happened, that scene was scary because it's all vampires and they cover you in blood. And now that scene is scary because there's just a bunch of people all in one room with no masks on.
Yeah.
I was watching
not even the blood. That part doesn't really bother me.
I don't care about that anymore.
I was watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood from 1968 this morning with my 4-year-old. And he had a chef come through who was making a snowman out of ice cream with his bare hands.
No,
I was so fucking disturbed. I was like, what? Was that ever okay? But apparently in 1968, that was just, we were all right with that.
Did they eat it after?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Mr. Rogers dug right in.
Wait, he was just bare hand shaping
ice cream.
And did he have like those meaty paws that people had in the 60s and 70s that were just like stubby fingers with lots of hair on their knuckles?
Also a great example of, it's worth going back and like looking at, I think there's a Post Raisin Bran commercial that's a great example of this, but they just didn't care what you looked like when they put you on TV in the 70s.
I missed my era.
The dude just looks like, you know,
rough, huh?
Real rough. Yeah. Like they wouldn't put him out front at a restaurant as a greeter. Like he was not like the face of being a chef. He was more of a behind the scenes type. But yeah, check out the Post Raisin Bran commercial where they've got a bunch of different, it's like an a cappella group where the different a cappella members are dressed as raisins. And it's like a 55-year-old like tubby dude who just like is the lead singer of the a cappella group. And no, they weren't worried about that. They were just like, what? He's a good singer. We got to put him in the television ad.
That man was Burt Reynolds. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's
that guy was considered sexy.
I mean, Burt Reynolds was sexy.
I think we can all agree on that. Oh, definitely.
All right, Dave, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a few of the things we're talking about. We're going to talk about a tumultuous relationship in Stephen Miller's family after the passing of his grandmother. We're going to talk about Florida. There's some bad polling for our president, Donald Trump, right now. And it's actually a really good case study in just how this pandemic was handled, because they had a young woman who created like the best dashboard in the country. And in a typical administration that was focused on addressing this problem, she would have been, you know, promoted up through the administration and been in charge of all these different things. And instead she was fired because it made the information too accessible. So we're going to talk about how that went down. Ghislaine, we have a clarification from the White House on why the president was wishing her well. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Tenet, because I think we're all a little bit horny for Tenet, but we all also know that we don't want to go to crowded theaters. But first, Dave, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
I recently looked up public access TV.
Yeah,
a project I'm working on, and I forgot the particulars of public access TV, but it was so important to not just society, but I guess to me too. Just like watching weird stuff on public access TV was part of how I spent most of my free time when I was a kid. Anybody could be a TV host. Anybody could sign up and have studio time and cameras and be put on television. It reminds me somewhat of being on a podcast. anybody
really
could do it. But seriously, like I miss public access TV. I miss that you could get perspectives from outsiders where people weren't necessarily trying to be just famous or follow trends, because public access TV shows existed in a bubble where there was no commentary, there was no feedback. It was just like, I'm going to make this thing because it seems good to me. But nobody could, like, immediately, instantly tell you you suck when your TV show came out. So a lot of people, you know, that ended up being successful and doing cool things started on public access TV. Tom Green's TV show was on public access TV. And I don't know how people feel about Tom Green, but I mean, he's a big deal for me when I was a kid. I thought he was hilarious.
The hardest laughs I had at a very developmental period of my life.
Yeah, I remember my mother just really realizing something was wrong with me, because she's like, there's just shit on a microphone and that's funny to you. And I'm like, but he's just putting it in their face and he's not saying anything about it, Mom.
Nothing made me laugh harder than when he sent the cow's head to his parents. They were so mad at him.
The statue that he put on his parents' lawn of his dad hitting his mom.
Yeah.
Which probably wouldn't fly these days, but
the other thing
I remember, like, in public access was sort of like the way I saw, like, some, like, raw, like, adult content that you could not really find anywhere else. And it took, like, you know, older kids to be like, I don't know if you watch public access, man, but, like, it goes down late at night.
And you can see a titty if you try hard enough.
Yeah, like, I remember the promised land at first when I was even engaging with it. It was like, that's, like, the dark web of TV content, basically.
Yeah, it was like YouTube before YouTube. For people, I'm sure there's a lot of our younger listeners who don't even realize like what we're talking about, but for a long time there, like Channel 3, I think, where I lived, was public access, and it was just, you know, videotapes. I remember once I saw and watched the entirety of a slasher movie made by people with absolutely no experience, and It was a blast. I would get my stalker content or slasher content anywhere I could. But
I like you said
really
Channel
bad.
3, because where I grew up, Channel 3 was the channel it had to be on to play Super Nintendo.
Oh, really? Yes. Yeah. Or the VCR or something. Yeah. It was either 3 or 4.
Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, it changed based on, like, I guess maybe some areas kept one channel sacred. Like, there's no Channel 3 in the L.A. market, so that was ours because 4 was NBC, but I'm guessing other places, 3 was a channel, 4 wasn't. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, no, 3 was definitely my channel for the VCR. And that actually shows how poorly thought out everything was back in the 80s, because you'd think that Channel 3 would have been like a really hot one to get, because people would go to turn it on that channel to watch a movie on the VCR and, like, be, you know, there's just a lot of traffic going through that station. But instead, it was always like public access and just bullshit. So bad job by you, cable bosses. Dave, what is something you think is overrated?
Oh, professional sports. This is a hard one for me to talk about right now, but as all the sports are coming back, I start to think about not just how much I enjoy watching the game, but now I'm forced to think about people's health and safety and the inevitable decline of our country. I'd like to just watch baseball, but I can't just watch baseball because now, you know, Juan Soto tests positive for COVID, and he was practicing with the team yesterday. He was playing with the team yesterday. They're all going to test positive now. So the Washington Nationals playing a baseball game tonight against the Yankees is a horrible idea. So if I tune into that, I am complicit in some way in this insanity, this public health nightmare. So, yeah, but professional sports are overrated only in the sense that not dying is underrated in America now.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Where are they playing that game, the Nationals-Yankees
Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Dr. Fauci is throwing out the first pitch. Did you know that?
No.
I've decided, or maybe I haven't decided, but it has been made apparent to me that life now is just a series of grim ironies.
Yeah,
wait,
really?
Are you being serious that he's throwing out the first pitch?
Yes, that's not a joke. That's what I mean. He's throwing out the first pitch, and the Nationals' best player can't play because he has COVID.
That's... The Simpsons foretold all of this.
Yeah. Yes. My favorite episode of The Simpsons was about COVID. Remember that one? God damn it. It's horrible.
Season 3, man. They really went
into that's a Schwartzwelder episode, I think.
Yeah, the sports thing is really interesting to see because, like, on the other side, you know, I know you watch a little bit of Premier League also. Mm-hmm. Over there, like, they've managed, obviously, the handling of the pandemic has been completely different, or it's much different than the United States, but that has managed to be somewhat pretty stable, and they're finishing out the season. But yeah, there's a lot of other things when you think of, like, sports that involve, like, not only just a lot of players on the field, but then the support staff that travels along with it. It almost feels like that seems like almost an unmanageable amount of people.
It seems like the only way to control this and to keep outbreaks from happening is to do what the NBA is doing, which is not perfect. MLS is doing this too, WNBA as well. Having a bubble, having all the players in the same place at the same time so they can contact trace when people test positive, so they can shut down teams. The first couple weeks of the MLS restart tournament, there were teams that were testing positive, like 3, 4, 5 people at a time. And so they just pulled the games. They just canceled the games. Instead of saying, oh, one person tested positive or 3 people tested positive, they just won't play and everybody else will. It's like, well, those people will probably test positive the next time you test them.
Mm-hmm.
So it just doesn't seem like you can do this unless you have complete control over the environment. You have complete control over where the players go, who they interact with, and their schedules. That's draconian and totalitarian and scary, but the other option is people getting sick and possibly dying. So yeah. I would rather have sports be controlled or not happen at all. Baseball is doing it totally wrong. Football is going to have fans, they say. They're going to put masks on people and have them go to football games.
Mm.
How does that make sense?
It doesn't.
I mean, they say that now. I mean, I can't... they're going to reduce the crowds to just 10,000 people?
Yeah, that's the only way you're going to be able to do this. And no concession stand lines, no bathroom lines. Like, there's no way you can guarantee that no one's going to get sick. They're going to have people sign waivers.
Right.
Saying, I admit that I am putting my life in danger by attending this football game.
But you can't beat the price on those tickets, though, man. Yeah. You got it. It's such a good deal.
They're priced to move.
The NBA thing is starting to look very smart because they had 0 positive tests in their last batch of, like, league-wide testing. And, you know, what they did was smart in that they created their own artificial environment where they could do the thing we should be doing as a nation, which right. is contact tracing, testing, contact tracing, not letting anything in or out. The thing that looks really dumb, when we were first talking about this idea, when we heard they were thinking about creating a bubble to, you know, have the end of the season and the playoffs in, we were like, well, clearly they're going to have it in New Zealand because that's the only place that has fully, like, gotten this under control. And instead they have it in Florida, in the center of Florida, which is... I think yesterday it had more positive, or last week it had more positive tests than all of Western Europe, like Florida as a state by itself. It's totally like the worst, like literally the worst location they could have chosen.
Yeah, it's not great, but at the very least they have shut down access to that part of Walt Disney World.
Yeah.
So you're hopeful that they can control it, but baseball teams are still going to be traveling.
Yeah.
They're going to be playing in their own home parks, which is what's happening in soccer in the Premier League in the UK. But the difference is that country is very small. It compared to the United States, there won't be, you know, a lot of travel in the way that there is here, where you're going from California to Arizona to Texas to Florida, you know, all of these different places. The chances of contracting the virus go up exponentially every time you leave the house, let alone get in an airplane, get on a bus, go into a locker room. It's just maddeningly stupid. And this whole process, this whole experience, this pandemic has reinforced for me that sports is not important.
Yeah.
It seems important because the media and the sports leagues have a vested interest in making it important to you and making it vital to your life and having it seem as though the wins and losses of your team are your wins and your losses. But in reality, this stuff is just a diversion. It's just a fun, pleasant afternoon at home or out at the stadium. It is not life and death. Life and death are real things that are happening every day. And
right. Yeah.
It just gets worse and worse.
I was pleased with how easy it was for me to drop sports from the things I gave a shit about there for 4 months. And I'm even wondering if I want to pick it back up. Like, I haven't read much NBA bubble content. I'm wondering if I should just, you know,
watch the vlogs
and keep it as background noise, but not really like get invested like the way I did.
It's hard to get invested in something frivolous or trivial when, you know, the fate of the world is at stake every day.
Yeah. What is something you think is underrated, Dave Schilling?
Silence. I love to talk. I like to hear people talk, but I don't give myself any time to sit in silence. And I'm constantly filling gaps in my day. If I'm not busy, I'm finding something to be busy with. If I'm, you know, trying to write, I'll distract myself with something else. There are so many times when I could just like sit in silence and just meditate or ruminate on the state of things, and I don't do it. And I think people should do that. It would be nice if people took a little bit more time to not do something.
Right.
I'm definitely in the phase of the pandemic where of the like quarantine shutdown where like I started out, I was like, all right, this will last for a couple weeks. And like, I was, you know, not doing anything, wasn't particularly productive. Then I went into a phase where I was like, all right, I'm meditating. I'm doing, you know, like this is an opportunity to improve. And then the past few weeks has just been a complete disaster. So I just, you were talking about having low energy days. I've been having a low energy July.
It's unfortunate that at the beginning there was almost a weird sense of optimism that, oh, this is going to be great, and we're going to have, you know, some fun inside, and we can watch movies and read books. And there was that stupid-ass viral tweet about Shakespeare, and it's like, oh, I could be so productive. And I was very productive for the first couple months. And then I think it was this month for me, too, where the dawning realization of this not ending anytime soon really hit me.
Yeah.
And, the walls start to close in on you at some point. And you're like, oh no, this is really just my life now, is being on the track, going from point A to point B over and over and over and over and over again. So I recommend everybody out there that's listening to this, take a second to be silent with your mind and with your entertainment and your all the things. Like, just stop doing stuff for a while.
Yeah.
And then that might refresh you. I'm gonna try to do that myself after this is over, is bury my head in the metaphorical sand and hopefully come back out, you know, with some renewed sense of purpose.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's important too, in when we're like sort of locked up inside and we get really anxious or thinking about the things we could be or should be doing, I think really, really letting go of that idea and actually, you know, taking the time, like if those thoughts are entering your head, to say, that may like seem more feasible when, you know, things are quote unquote normal. But at this point, that's really not what is in order right now. And it feels weird because it's the antithesis of how we've been operating for pretty much most of our entire lives for most people. So yeah, being able to let that go and being accepting that, you know, you have to tell yourself too, is like, it's okay. It's not just sort of saying like, oh, I'm stressed. Like, you have to tell yourself like out loud, I'm okay with that because I understand what's going on, but that doesn't have to define this entire thing. Like, that's just my natural response, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be like, I think a lot of times you're like, I'm stressed. Fuck it. I don't want to be stressed. How am I not? I don't like to be stressed. How do I fucking end my stress? Like, no, take it first as like, it's cool if I'm stressed first. Take that on, and then it'll slowly dissipate. Don't do the panic mode about not wanting to be stressed.
I do talk to myself out loud, but it sounds like that last voice you were using. I'm like, come on, man, what are you doing? What is it?
Well, you fucking idiot. You're wasting your entire life. You sound like Jimmy Cagney again.
Out here, come on.
Come on. And finally, what is a myth? What's something people think is true, you know to be false, or vice versa, Dave?
There's a misconception that you can't enjoy socializing on a Zoom call. I think that's not true. There are ways to do it. There are ways to have fun having remote social activities with people.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, most of the time it's like, I invited 37 of my best friends in the whole world and we're all going to do a dress up party, or I'm going to play music for everyone. It's going to be so fun. That's not fun. You know what that is? That's too many people to ever have a conversation. You right. talk to one person maybe, or whoever is the loudest and the most obnoxious of the 37 people you invited, who's just screaming jokes at you and trying to tell you about their kid and how he's potty training, or, oh boy, guess what I did? I rearranged all my books and now they're color-coded, or, you know, whatever the thing is. You can't enjoy anybody like that. Have a small group. I do a thing where every 2 or 3 weeks I get the same 3 people together, and the 4 of us have a conversation, and it's very relaxed, and it's good, and we get to catch up, and it feels like you have human contact for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The only other human contact I have is doing podcasts,
right?
You know, that's work, you know. So you have to do some things where it's just a couple people, you can have a real conversation where you're able to have a transference of emotion and actually talk to each other. But if it's 37 people and it's like, I'm here for my birthday, and oh, look at my cool background, after 20 minutes, it gets real fucking old.
It's so exhausting. And half the time you're looking at like the gallery view and like you're looking to like whoever you're with, and like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah, who is that person?
Keep talking?
My girlfriend had a birthday and I invited a couple people who didn't know anybody else, and they just sat there in silence. And I'm like, I'm ruining their night.
Yeah, right.
If I had just not invited them, they would have not cared. But then I invited them and they had to sit there and pet their cat and wait for their Postmates to show up instead of having a conversation, because you can't introduce yourself on a Zoom call.
Right.
Unless you're the loudest motherfucker on the planet, exactly. Which I am. So I'm fine with it, but nobody else is.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch,
Every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
And we're back. So, you know, in sad news, one of the 140,000 people who passed away was Stephen Miller's grandmother. Stephen Miller, obviously, you know, a creepy white supremacist, but apparently...
Oh, come on. Call him by his formal name. Teenage Mutant Ninja Goebbels.
That's right.
That's what he does. He's just the architect of all, like, the racist, xenophobic speeches, and, like...
So he's, like, the Splinter of the group.
Yeah, well, actually, Jeff Sessions is, because that's Splinter, because he sharpened his racist tools working for Jeff Sessions, and then Jeff Sessions is like, you might like this ghoul kid for your speeches, and then he moved on over to the White House, but, yeah, his uncle has had, like, this really... They've had a very publicly, like... turbulent relationship. Like, he's written op-eds about, like, yo, my nephew's a fucking joke. Like, he's, you know, don't let him fool you with this immigrant stuff. Like, he descends from immigrants and he should be proud of that, etc. And then so when his grandmother died, it's his maternal, when Stephen Miller's maternal grandmother died, his uncle, you know, posted this, had made a post and made it very clear how he feels, just saying, quote, this morning, my mother, Ruth Glosser, died of the late effects of COVID-19, like so many thousands of other people, both young and old. She survived with acute infection, but was left with lung and neurological damage that destroyed her will to eat and her ability to breathe well enough to sustain arousal and consciousness. Over an 8-week period, she gradually slipped away and died peacefully this morning. With the death of my mother, I'm angry and outraged at Stephen directly and the administration he has devoted his energy to supporting. That jumps down a little bit in the post, but basically saying, like, I really hold you and this administration you work for accountable for your grandmother's death. And when they asked the White House or Stephen Miller to comment on that, this is the response from the White House asking, hey, you know, Stephen Miller, your uncle's saying it's probably the president's fault for what happened to your grandmother dying. What do you have to say? The White House says, quote, this is categorically false and a disgusting use of so-called journalism when the family deserves privacy to mourn the loss of a loved one. His grandmother did not pass away from COVID. She was diagnosed with COVID in March and passed away in July. So that timeline does not add up at all. His grandmother died peacefully in her sleep from old age. I would hope that you would choose not to go down this road.
Again, this is categorically false. She had a mild case of COVID-19 in March. She was never hospitalized and made a full and quick recovery. A mild case, so they didn't even
the actual typo in there,
right?
And then his uncle even pulled out the death certificate, like literal death receipts, to say that respiratory arrest due to COVID. And this is just, you know, I think part and parcel. I was always wondering, I'm like, what happens when someone who works in that administration, you know, loses a family member? Like, what is that thought process exactly?
Well, they're gonna do exactly this. They're gonna fall in line. They're going to say nothing themselves directly. They're gonna have a spokesperson say it through some sort of generic and hateful statement like this, and right, they're gonna hope that it goes away, because that is really what defines people who thrive in the Trump administration is sycophants. Yeah, they couldn't even find a way to make Steve Bannon work because Steve Bannon was too narcissistic and into himself. Right. It's really the people who were willing to subjugate their entire personality, give up their families, give up their identity in favor of this man who doesn't even seem to understand what's happening at any given period of time and had to invent a story about why he thinks a simple cognitive test was the most important test, right, that's ever been created. Like, this is the person that they have decided to give up everything for. And that's shocking to me that they've chosen Donald Trump of all people to be the person that will cause them to turn their backs on their families and to turn their backs on themselves as human beings. It's cult stuff, but he's the shittiest cult leader of all time. Like, L. Ron Hubbard was more charismatic than Donald Trump.
Right. I think there must be something charismatic that doesn't, like, appeal to us, but that, because, I mean, it feels like, yes, he burns down every life that he comes into contact with and has influence over, but he has been given access and influence to so many lives over and over again that there must be, like, some predatory, you know, system that he has evolved over the course of his life to make it possible for him to just sway this many people, because it's certainly not evident to us, to people watching from a distance. But I mean, I guess this also is represents something that's happening to Americans across the country whose family will no longer talk to them because they're Trump supporters.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a certain element of tearing people down and building them back up in your own image. If you destroy someone's self-esteem thoroughly enough, they will come looking to you to refill what is now missing in your soul. And I think that's probably what he does, because that's unfortunately what a lot of people in Hollywood do.
Right.
A lot of agents, a lot of producers, a lot of studio heads, you know, that is the way that they get allegiance and control, is from ruining your self-esteem, saying you're an idiot, constantly second guessing you, constantly nitpicking everything that you do. And then when you get even the smallest sliver of positive reinforcement, you're like, oh, I love this person. This is my mentor. I can't get enough of this human being who makes me feel like absolute dog shit.
Right. Yeah.
The idea of someone's going, ah, oh, that's my mentor right there.
That's my guy right here. Big DT.
Hitching my star to this one, or my whatever it is. Wagon.
Ask his kids. Like, his kids are clearly victims of this. They wouldn't see themselves as victims, but they are, because you think he treats them better than he treats Stephen Miller, or he treats Jeff Sessions when he was still around, or treats anybody, William Barr? No, of course not. He treats everybody equally like garbage, and then demands fealty and demands complete subjugation. Like I said, it's like it sucks.
Because
kids are suffering.
I mean, you look at Don Jr. and like the way that, like,
don't make me look at him.
The way he's chasing that dragon of daddy's hug that he just can't seem to get his hands on. You know what I mean? Like, I guess in that similar way, it's like there's an appeal where it's like he can represent this sort of aloof parent that people wanted a relationship with. And also, like, there's a combination of this mystique of this dated, you know, 80s wheeler dealer, you know, super capitalist guy that I think also is hypnotic to a certain kind of person. You can tell, because, like, it seems like some people are just sort of stuck in that idealized mindset of, like, yeah, Donald Trump is like the sickest kind of, like, American you could be.
Yeah,
it's him or Kid Rock, right?
Right.
I think you look across the board at any authoritarian throughout history, and that is the thing that they all have in common, is this way in which they replace your father. Mm. The person in your life that's supposed to make you feel good about yourself, or that's supposed to make you feel strong, or whatever. And it always works better on men than it does on women. And I'm sure there are women out there who, you know, see him as a father figure or find him as sexually attractive, but it's those things seem so foreign to you and I and anybody else. Half the country thinks he's a moron. The other half of the country thinks he's infallible. And that's, I guess, the only way that authoritarianism works in America, is if you game the system enough that you convince half the country that you're right. The other half of the country can go to hell.
Right. All right. Let's move on to Florida specifically. It reached a single day record. I mean, it keeps topping its single day record for deaths from the virus Thursday, with 173 new deaths, as well as 10,250 new cases of the virus. People are, you know, getting more restless as their unemployment benefits dry up, and as the state officials are still pushing forward with considering school reopenings. So a poll recently came out, and we don't like to put too much stock in polling, but it is at least worth keeping an eye on, that it seems like this is having an effect, right?
Yeah. in Florida in the beginning, everyone seemed pretty chill with what the situation was there in terms of the cases and how the governor, Ron DeSantis, was handling things. But it has completely like gone lopsided now. So now only 38% of respondents in a poll said that they approve of his handling of the virus. 57% said they disapprove. In April, 41% disapproved. So that's a pretty significant swing. But I think all this to say is these people, there are many people who are finding themselves in a state where they are just, you know, constantly burying their head in their palms, being like, what is going on? Like, really, this the governor is saying this out loud. We're really talking about sending kids to school and putting everyone at risk. And you know, I think in the beginning it was fine because people were really stuck on this like reopening, like rah, rah, we got to get the economy going. But like that momentum has definitely dissipated to a certain extent. Like now, since that argument has really worn thin, people are like, what are we doing here? Like it just feels really, really dark. And in terms of like the reopening, 61% of these respondents in the poll said the reopening of Florida, which was one of the earliest, was just totally premature. And then only 31 said it was about the right pace and 6 said it was too slow. So even now the public opinion is sort of like, you completely botched the reopening. You're forcing things open. You're not doing anything that makes sense in terms of containment or contact tracing or anything. And so it's starting to affect Florida and by, you know, extension, the presidential race, because Joe Biden is leading by what 13 points, 51 to 38% in a Quinnipiac poll. I mean, that's just, again, a snapshot, but it's just like, I think that it just shows you that even in a state that in the beginning felt very in support of like what the administration was doing, once those really bad decisions start affecting their lives, it's not helping the numbers by any stretch of the imagination, no matter how much they talk about Wall Street or whatever.
Yeah. And it doesn't right. help that their governor looks like whenever he gives a press conference, he's just watched the last 10 minutes of Requiem for a Dream again. He looks like it's the Shuck same thing, Daddy. The same thing as Bush, when he was told about the first plane hitting the World Trade Center.
Right.
It's just like, Oh, I don't know what to do. I got Donald Trump chewing me out every day saying, you need to reopen. You got to do this. This is what you have to do to succeed. I need you. If you don't do these things, I'm going to bury you for the rest of your career. And then he's got his constituents who were like, please stop letting us die. Please do something. And he can't. He doesn't know what to do. He's not a politician with any skill or finesse or confidence or understanding of how politics works, which is the one thing that connects everything with this crisis, is we have people in important jobs who do not understand how politics works, that do not understand how governance works. They don't understand the simple job, not simple, but the vital job of making a state or a city or a county run efficiently. They're not prepared for this crisis. They are not interested in meeting the moment. They're not interested in solutions. They are interested in re-elections. They are interested in consolidating their power, moving up the ladder. They're careerists above all else. And that is the problem with someone like Eric Garcetti in Los Angeles. Eric Garcetti never wanted to be mayor of Los Angeles. No one who runs for mayor of Los Angeles actually wants the job because it sucks. You're beholden to the police union. You're beholden to developers. You're beholden to business people. You're beholden to celebrities. You don't get to do anything. You just get to go throw out the first pitch at Dodgers games and guest star on Modern Family every once in a while. That's all you get to do. And then maybe, if you're lucky, at the end of it, you get to go be governor of California or a senator, or if you're lucky, really lucky, president of the United States. And so Eric Garcetti runs for mayor and he's like, all right, I'm just going to do this for a few years. And then I got to punch my ticket to Washington. And then this happens, and he's not prepared. He doesn't know what to do because he's never had to actually run a city before. So he's just, like, just so completely out of his depth, unwilling to make the hard decisions anymore, caved immediately to business interests who said, please just reopen, stop the protests, please reopen. And we're suffering because of that. Ron DeSantis, same thing. He doesn't know what he's doing. He has no clue. But he's just going to continue pretending like he does and giving us that dead-eyed stare like he's a hostage. He's being forced to be governor of Florida. No one's forcing you to be governor of Florida, dude. You can quit today. You can go home and play golf for the rest of your life. You can die at 79 or 80 on a golf course, and you'll be so happy.
It just really turned on a lot of these folks really fast. Like, prior to his mishandling of the coronavirus, he was being talked about as the one of the top candidates for the Republican presidential nomination in 2024. And then he was asked to actually do something. And
what's weird, because there used to be there are Republicans who are actually interested in politics and governance, you know, to your point, Dave. And now it's just a bunch of people cosplaying as politicians who are find themselves actually in office and oh shit.
Yeah.
I just liked talking spicy and pretending I was a Trump, junior. And that shit actually worked to this point. And now I'm fuck. I was just kind of here to, have some hot takes, get some photos, and feel really powerful. The whole having the responsibility of taking care of constituents part, I absolutely do not fuck with at all. I'm here for the photos.
It's a grift. It's a grift. Yeah. It's always been a grift for these people. It starts at the top with Donald Trump, and it goes all the way down to the rest of these people who got swept in his wake. And we're starting to see them as frauds. They are the frauds we always thought they were.
People need to check the footnotes for this link off to a Yahoo article. That's really a great case study in how the priorities of the leadership all the way at the top kind of trickle down and in this case made any sort of coronavirus response completely, just burned it down when it was just kind of getting going. There's this woman, Rebecca Jones, we've talked about before. She's a 30-year-old kind of wunderkind who put put this best in class dashboard together that basically you could go on this dashboard and find out anything you wanted to about coronavirus in Florida. And it was the best in of any state. She had kind of built it herself behind the scenes because she knew that that DeSantis wasn't that wasn't a priority of his. And then it just got systematically corrupted. Her higher ups, who were closer to DeSantis, were you have to change the data so that these rural counties seem like they have better numbers so that we can reopen there, because it's going to be politically problematic for him to reopen these urban counties, but not the rural ones, because rural is more Republican leaning. And so it's going to, fuck with his base. And she eventually pushed back until she was fired. And then when she just sent an email out to her, a handful of researchers that she worked with, just explaining what had happened, and the media got wind of it, they went full Trumpian counterattack. They dug up a criminal case that was pending against her about from a bad relationship she was in, and just really went scorched earth just to try and tear her character down. And just an incredible story, and also a good example of, I was saying earlier, in a functional administration, a functional any sort of organization, this would have been a thing that you highlight, duplicate, and then bring this person who has these incredible gifts forward to do more. And instead, they isolated it, kind of sabotaged it, and then fired the person. And that's how you end up with exactly what she said was going to happen back when she built the database and was kind of arguing with them about the sabotaging and the manipulation of numbers. She was like, no, so what's going to happen if you do that and reopen in these places where you're having 20% of the people testing positive? If you reopen there, you're going to have numbers like this. And sure enough, those numbers are exactly what we're seeing right now.
Nah, here's the thing with the data and the truth. You know, if people find out about it, then they're not going to listen to me anymore. So I got to just dead that right there in its tracks. I mean, it's like they have to like have these people living in like the village, like the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Right.
Where it's like, yo, in here, when you follow this party, there's just the reality is just way different in here, because that's the only way you're going to fuck with staying over here. Because if you found out how everybody else is living, you might not like this anymore. But yeah, just that dedication to snuffing out truth. And even in something like this where it's helpful, you know, it just shows you again, we're constantly every day. I think that's the other part is we're before it was easy to be like, you know, say or not that it was easier when the Republicans would have any kind of policy or bill or whatever. You could see the lack of humanity or empathy that was there. And it was always sort of there. But now when we're just talking about like, you just have to be honest here to prevent the loss of life and they're not willing to do that. It really underscores what the end game is. And it's just, that's what I think makes it really disturbing now. It's like,
yeah,
they're waiting at the clock.
People are dying and they don't care.
Yeah, yeah. They're waiting at the clock. They're hoping, okay, if we can get a vaccine approved by, you know, November or a late October.
October surprise.
Yeah, the October surprise will be the vaccine being approved magically. If we can at least say we have a vaccine, people will be happy and they will vote us all back into office. But that's not going to happen. It's unlikely that they will approve anything before the election. You know, most people say the earliest we can get a vaccine is December. For something approved, not even produced and distributed, but approved.
Yeah.
But if
the plan, yeah,
they're just,
it feels like a thing, like a desperate divorcee dad, like a plan he hatches to get his kids back, like Mrs. like the Mrs. Doubtfire of dealing with the pandemic. Like, I don't know, man, maybe this will work and we'll get back in power. And you're like, no, fool, just do the fucking right thing.
I was going to say, it's sort of like when your mom says, you got to clean your room. Your room's filthy, and you're like, okay, well, I know what to do. I'll hide all of my filthy clothes and magazines and video games and candy wrappers and shit under my bed, and then it won't be there. She won't see it, and then I can pull it all out when it's over, and she will forget that she ever wanted me to clean my room. All I have to do is dupe her for a few minutes, and then she'll go away. But this is not going to go away.
Killed people.
They do. Snickers bars have all kinds of chemicals in them. It's ridiculous. They are behaving like children.
Yeah. By the way, we have nothing wrong with Snickers. Snickers satisfies. If you ever want to sponsor,
please,
we're
yes,
here for it.
Cut that part out. I didn't mean to say that about my favorite candy bar. It's so yummy, and they got nougat in it.
All right, guys, let's take another quick break, and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
And we're back. And so real quick, we just we got an update from the White House about the statement that the president sent out to Ghislaine Maxwell, saying that he honestly wishes her the best.
Wish her well, man. You know,
They clarified what was their clarification?
Okay.
Was he joking this time?
I don't know. Kayleigh McEnany goes on Brett Baier on Fox News, and even he's like, you know, just kind of, he's like, you got to admit, like, it's just kind of a weird answer. Like, let me you can hear him say it, and her answer is really something else.
He said, I just wish her well. Frankly, I wish her well. That raised some eyebrows, Kayleigh.
Well, what the president was noting is that the last person who was charged in this case ended up dead in a jail cell. And the president wants justice to be served for the victims in this case. And he prefers this to play out in a courtroom.
And that's, have you talked to him about that?
I have spoken to him about that.
Because a lot of people were saying it just seemed strange answer, but
and let me know one more thing, Brett. You know, this president is the president that that banned Jeffrey Epstein from coming to Mar-a-Lago. This president was always on top of this, ahead of this, noting this, banning this man from his property long before this case was even being played out in a court of law.
Ignore all the years that he was his best friend.
Right. And what you also could have put out, yes, Jeffrey Epstein might have eventually banned him, but Ghislaine Maxwell, who we are actually talking about, recruited one of their most abused victims from Mar-a-Lago. So yeah.
That I don't understand. I mean, because, yeah, Brett Baier was even like, I mean, it's kind of weird, fool. Like, I don't know. Like, how's he going to say that shit?
You know what? I am at a loss for words, folks. What?
Like, he was for real, though, Kayleigh? And he's like, you talked to him? Like, for real, though? Yeah, and I spoke to him. And, like, I'll have you know, like, he knew Jeffrey Epstein was creepy, like, the first 20 years they hung out. And then something happened with Ivanka. And then that's when he finally decided this dude was banned from Mar-a-Lago. Or whatever that rumor is about the two of them. But even in the way he speaks about her when he's asked the question in that press briefing, it's like he refers to Jeffrey Epstein as being like, yeah, and they were like, I guess they lived together. But we talked about this yesterday. Which one is it? Like, what does this response mean?
I have a theory. The theory is Donald Trump is a very stupid person.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we can all agree on that. He's not a very sharp man. And so when someone asks him a question he is uncomfortable answering, he has been trained to just say, I wish them well. I hope for the best. You know what? I hope that God shines his light upon her. That's all he's going to be able to say because he can't form a coherent thought that articulates what he should be saying for political purposes. So he just defaults to this kind of generic positive sentiment. But that doesn't work with someone who is being accused of sex trafficking. That doesn't, yeah. We don't want you to wish the sex trafficker well. And on the other side, now people are saying, oh, that was mafia-style intimidation. And he's sending her a message to from the White House to prison, saying, if you behave, I won't have you executed, or I will pardon you or something. So he just doesn't, he is very, very dumb. He is the person who, in that interview about the test, starts rattling off clearly fake questions from the test because he named things that were in his peripheral vision as he was talking to the reporter.
So this is the Chris Wallace interview from over last weekend, right? Where Trump bragged about how hard he aced the test that they gave him, the cognitive test, and how some of the questions were so hard that they didn't expect anybody to be able to answer them, but he got them. And Chris Wallace was like, sir, I took the test just to see what it was like. And the questions, like, it's a pretty easy test, man. It's like, what, one of them was, what is this thing? And it was a lion. And he just had to say it's a lion.
Another He's like, yeah, but them, what is that thing, though?
Another of them was count backwards by 7 from 100. And Trump was like, yeah, man, exactly. Like, you know.
Yeah, I killed that.
Chris, it was very hard. Very hard
100,
test.
7, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, what?
These are games that I play with my 2-year-old. It's like, yeah, what color is that fire truck? It's red. Oh, good job. Because he's learning what colors are and what objects are. This man saying he knows what a lion is, being some kind of badge of honor, just bums me out so much.
Yeah, and I mean, I would love to see the test. I would love to, because they have reproduced like a similar test. I don't know if we've seen the exact test, but
I mean, if it's similar, I can imagine it's probably very similar. Like, it can't be too different, right?
If we can get the Snyder Cut released on HBO Max, we can get that fucking test out.
Yeah, release the test.
All right, let's switch over to the world of popular culture. Tenet is a Chris Nolan movie that is done. It's finished. It's in the can. Literally, like, the film is in the canisters, ready to be projected into theaters, and it's being held back because of COVID-19, because of the global pandemic that is happening. The movie, I hadn't realized this, cost $205 million.
That's before marketing.
That's right.
Which, so they got some money to make off this thing,
and it's an interesting risk because it's like a big, like, that's a lot of money to spend on a thing where I can't even explain to somebody what it is, like what the movie is. It's like, yeah, well, it's like
same
time
with
goes
the Matrix,
backward
bro.
And forward, and
it's the new film from visionary director Christopher Nolan. That's all you need to say.
Yeah, right. Yeah, totally. Oh, I'm so excited about it. That's a big. They took a gamble, and that now they're getting fucked by unforeseen and unforeseeable circumstances. But so now people are trying to figure out what they're going to do with the movie, basically.
Yeah, they're, you know, you got a blockbuster film that you just know, if it comes out and theaters were open, it does what it needs to do and it's fine. Everyone can go back to their desks. But, you know, there's rumors that first that it could possibly be put on HBO Max, just to go like, let people need to see it. Let's put it on HBO Max. It can draw a lot of subscribers in. And I think, you know, while that it was a nice idea, the CEO of AT&T, which is the parent company of Warner Brothers, was basically saying, I'd be very surprised if that would be the case in terms of Tenet or like Wonder Woman going to streaming. In fact, I can assure you with Tenet, that's not going to be the case. So, you know, I get it. Trolls did well. And some other things did actually, you know, decent job performing by streaming. But yeah, I think Tenet is just one. It's weird because even if it was streaming, part of me would want to just abstain because I'd want to see it in a, I just want to see it in a large format. So I don't know, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see, or people can just sit really close to their TVs and pretend they're at the movie theater.
I want to watch it on my phone while I'm taking a dump in 10 to 15 minute increments.
In quibbies?
As God intended. God being Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't know about this whole thing. I'm sure he has some language in his contract that says it has to be released theatrically. Just put it out in China. They'll love it.
Right, anywhere else. Like, yeah, it just becomes this coveted thing that we just don't have in the U.S. Maybe that'll put pressure from, like, dudes on the internet to go after the administration. Like, get this pandemic in order, man.
Yeah.
Everyone's watching Tenet but me, man. I can't fucking go on Reddit anymore. Everything's a fucking spoiler.
We get everything ahead of time or before the rest of the world. Maybe a little taste of our own medicine would be nice.
Could you imagine? Like, what if that's the thing that suddenly wakes a bunch of people up? They're like, what? Another? Yeah.
No.
You gotta wait till when?
It's not gonna be it. You know what it's gonna be? Is if we have to shut down Pornhub.
Oh,
that would be the end of this mask rebellion in a second. If people were told that they couldn't watch free pornography on the internet, everybody would wear a mask.
Yeah.
All right, real quick before we go, Miles, what are we watching this weekend for people to watch with us?
I am going to begin, you know, I love reality, and anything involving romance and reality is right up my alley. So Indian Matchmaking, I'm going to dive in and just check out a couple episodes. I'll probably end up watching everything. I don't know if I'll watch everything in time, but yes, this is, I'll be watching Indian Matchmaking.
Awesome. I'll be watching Palm Springs on Hulu. I've been recommended that by Hulu and a bunch of other people. So we're going to check that out. Well, Dave, it has been a pleasure having you on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you and follow you?
You can find me on Twitter at Dave_Schilling, and my podcast, Full Court Chat with Dave Schilling, is dropping season 2, the premiere, on July 30th, in time for the restart of the NBA season. It's a sports improv comedy podcast that I believe you'll like very much.
What is a sports improv comedy podcast?
Good question. It is a parody of sports podcasts and talk shows where I play a version of myself that's slightly more obnoxious, and I interview either comedians impersonating real athletes or coming up with characters in sort of in a comedy bang bang kind of way.
Got it.
Yeah.
Awesome. And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yes, I actually have one planned. It's from Cullen Crawford, who was very funny, used to be a writer for The Colbert Show. And he tweeted on the 22nd, "It's funny to me that the Marines figured out a macho way to all yell hooray together." I thought that
hoorah!
Was good. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Miles, where can people find you and follow you, and what's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Find me Twitter, Instagram, Miles of Gray. Also, the other podcast, 420 Day Fiancé. You know, I'm talking about 90 Day Fiancé, the trash nominon. It's the trash we're nominon. Whoa. So a tweet I like is from at Ben_Rosen. It says, "Republicans, we're having the military throw protesters in unmarked vans. Democrats, mark the vans." Oh, it's bleak, but yeah, that's what it feels like. No, it's actually, no, that's at. What it is. That's what it is, actually.
You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. A tweet I've been enjoying, Ja Too Solid tweeted, "CNN said the world is $217 trillion in debt. Who the fuck do we owe? Thanos?" You can find me
worth
on Twitter, Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episodes, as well as the song we ride out on. Miles, what are we riding out on today?
The song we're going to go out on is from New Young Pony Club, and it's called Get Lucky. Not the other one from Daft Punk. No, this is a different one. This came out before and has a much nicer electro punk funk vibe, so you can get your vacuuming on or your laundry folding, whatever you know, housework.
Nice. All right. Well, we're going to ride out on that. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. We're going to be back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we will talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.
Watch on, wax off to a different scheme. Lemonade.
Zeitgang, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.